Well, since you're here, Squidward, we'll give you the new member initiation. Are you ready, Patrick?
Ready!
Welcome to our club!
Shut your half-wit pie holes!
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
Hello and welcome to TV Concierge, a podcast on The Ringer that helps you navigate the vast streaming landscape. My name is Danny Heifetz, host of The Ringer Fantasy Football Show, and I am joined by my co-host, my producer, and my friend, Craig Horlbeck.
Wow.
Because I called you your friend? Is that what the wow?
That was a nice trio. I thought you were going to call me the barnacle boy to your mermaid man or something like that.
No, I'm not that mean. I was going to do the intro of just like, are you ready, Craig? But I was like, I don't know if you were going to go along with the bit.
I don't know if I would have got along with it, but I respect it. Good for you. You do the voice pretty well.
I can hear you. Okay, no, we're going to talk about SpongeBob because Paramount Plus is out.
Yeah.
You probably have it because you needed to watch Meghan Markle talk to Oprah. But now it's like, what do you do with this service?
So it was also on cable, the Meghan Markle interview.
What is cable?
That's true.
Didn't that die with the dinosaurs?
That's why TV Concierge exists, because you don't have cable.
Yeah, exactly. That's why this whole thing is going on. So anyway, Paramount Plus is going on. Fun fact for you. The most distributed show by Viacom CBS, the company, is SpongeBob SquarePants. And so you could argue that the most anticipated property on Paramount Plus is, in fact, SpongeBob SquarePants. So we kind of wanted to do this episode as a guide for people who love it, an intro for people who don't know it, like many of our bosses, which we're going to get to.
Yeah.
But first, Craig. Mm-hmm. What was your relationship with SpongeBob as a kid? Was it the number one show in your rotation?
Yes, it was the number one show in my rotation. I was born in 1994. SpongeBob started in 1999. So do you think I was a little too young, or do you think that was perfect?
All right, let's just start here. I think I was way too young for this. My mom hated that I watched this show. She thought it made me dumber. And after I started rewatching, I think she was right. I don't know if I would show kids this show. I think it did make me more stupid.
Get out of here. How did SpongeBob make you? SpongeBob is incredibly intelligent. It's smart stupid. It's stupid,
it is
smart, smart
stupid. It is, yeah, it's smart stupid. But it's still stupid. But it's amazing stupid.
So I watched other shows like Rugrats, Rocket Power, Wild Thornberries.
Hey Arnold. My mom prefer me have watched Hey Arnold over SpongeBob 100 times out of 100.
But all those shows started in kind of the mid to early 90s. So you were getting bored of them. They were kind of at their tail end when SpongeBob started, and SpongeBob was kind of completely different. Even the animation seemed different. So SpongeBob was like my go-to after school special, you know?
Yeah. SpongeBob's crazy. Cause like visually they splice in all these explosions and they cut to like actual like F1 crashes. And they have this crazy style that in some ways, I mean, one of the reasons SpongeBob is still kind of prevalent on the internet is you watch these episodes from like literally 2001, 2002, and you're like, that could be a viral video on the internet today, unedited. They have this very different style to it.
Well, it's if you did the rewatchables category, what's aged the best? It's like the production design of SpongeBob. Like there'll be scenes where they kind of punch in and the frame is no longer this colorful animated. It's like more hand-drawn or more... You know what I mean? It's more detailed. Like they really like cut in and out of kind of different artistic frameworks really well. And almost in like not a childish way, a very artistic way. I think the way the show's directed is as good as it is written.
I don't know if it's ever been so clear that people making a children's show were on drugs the whole time. Like, I don't know if it was mushrooms or acid or what, but like there was like a real like drug vibe to like the whole series.
Well, it doesn't take itself too seriously. Like, the physics don't make sense. Doesn't matter. It'll break the fourth wall all the time. Doesn't matter. Well, I kind of think it's like a really watered down PG Family Guy at times.
No, you're not wrong about that. So you mentioned the lineup. So like the Nickelodeon lineup, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to be a little prejudiced here. I'm not going down the Cartoon Network lineup right here. I do want to hit the Nickelodeon ones you mentioned. So it's like SpongeBob, Rocket Power, Hey Arnold, Rugrats, Jimmy Neutron, shout out, The Wild Thornberrys, Fairly Odd Parents. Why did none of those shows have the internet resonance that SpongeBob do? Because you don't see Fairly Odd Parents memes, even though I kind of liked Fairly Odd Parents better than SpongeBob at the time.
You know, I don't know. I think that SpongeBob is extremely relatable. It's very human situations. I think the essence of the show is kind of ignorance is bliss. And I think we're all Squidward. And I think we all want to be SpongeBob. And SpongeBob always wins.
That's really true. The shittiest part is like, as I get older, I'm like, damn, I get why Squidward wanted them to keep it down all the time.
Right. You know, they're in the box of imagination and you hear all these incredible sounds on the outside and you go in and they're not doing anything. And it's like a perfect example of like, hey, never grow up, because inside the box is more fun than outside the box. And we're all outside the box.
I have to, my favorite line in the entire series is when Patrick's like, you don't know what I'm thinking. The inner machinations of my mind are enigma. And then it's like a milk carton spilling over. And I'm like, damn, I miss like abstract thoughts.
It's so stupid smart. There's times when the Family Guy thing, you know how Family Guy really relies on like repetition? They'll do the same thing over and over until it's funny, or they'll like have these awkward pauses.
Yeah, or like the knee when it's like, like 100 yes. times in a row.
SpongeBob's weirdly good at that. Like, you know the Frankendoodle episode when the pencil falls right at the beginning and they start running around like crazy and screaming. For a brief second, Patrick just stops and stares at it and then keeps running again. Like yes. That type of stuff is what I think separates the show, because it was kind of meta. Like, Hey Arnold didn't do this stuff.
No, meta is the word. Meta is the word. They play with format and genre in a way that no other cartoon kids show did. And in a way, that's kind of letting kids in on the joke. Like, totally. Treating your audience kind of smarter. I mean, audience of six-year-olds. So,
and it's becoming a bit contrived to say this, but it really does work for adults and kids. I mean, I know that they say that about a lot of cartoon kids shows, but it really does stay just as good, if not better, when you're 26.
But on that note, so I think there's a weird thing about SpongeBob. We do the Ringer Fantasy Football show together with Danny Kelly. So you were born in 96. I was born in 95.
I was born in 94.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Danny Kelly, yeah. Math, I don't know. Danny Kelly, who we do it with, was born in, I don't know, 1960?
Yeah, I think around World War II, 45.
So technically, we're all millennials, 25 and 37. But you and I have a very strong theory that SpongeBob is like the demarcating line. It's like halftime between the millennials. Like, the millennials who don't remember SpongeBob are kind of really have nothing to do with us. And then there's a sweet spot of like 22-year-olds to like really somewhere around 28, 29, it peters out. And that's the SpongeBob generation. And those are the people who get the internet still and memes online. And then all of our bosses, or some of the people asked us to do this podcast, are above that and have no idea what SpongeBob is, thinks it's bizarre and, I don't know, ruined our generation. I don't know what people older think of SpongeBob.
Yeah, you know, if the hottest take were still around, I would say that I think we need to redo the generations, because millennials too wide. It's too wide.
It's ridiculous.
Way too wide. And it needs to be the SpongeBob. I'm okay with being called the SpongeBob generation, whatever you want to call it. The bikini bottoms.
Bikini bottoms.
But yeah, there was this, you know, my brother's 30 years old. And he, if I said like, what's your favorite SpongeBob episode? I guarantee you he couldn't pick one. Couldn't pick a single episode. And meanwhile, I can recite this shit like it's an encyclopedia.
Should we get to reciting it like it's an encyclopedia?
Well, let me ask you this. So how many episodes did you watch in preparation of this recording?
Well, are we counting? Is it like, because you know how every episode's like vestigial? Like they have two episodes. So are you counting that as one or two?
So I actually like went back and rewatched shows last year for like another reason. Me and my friend were bored. We went back and watched SpongeBob. When I was a kid, I don't think I understood that two episodes were in one 22-minute time slot.
No, I didn't either.
Like, remembering it, I thought each episode was 22 minutes, but it's not. Each episode is 11. And it's kind of incredible, because what I think SpongeBob does so well is every memory you have of the episode is kind of just, that is every part of the episode. There's no fluff. Like, they get right into it. It is a joke. It is a plot moving point. It is another joke. It is a plot moving point. Like, SpongeBob does not fuck around. It is a tight 11 minutes. They get in, they get out, and it's your full memory. There's no, like, you know...
Exposition. It's kind of like Family Guy will have these long meandering A blocks, and then the end of like this 7 or 8 minute thing sets up the rest of the episode. SpongeBob, just the A block, the 8 minutes is the show.
The Fry Cook Games are announced like episode, like second 10, and they're competing like 1 minute, 30 seconds into the episode, and you like understand all of it. It's amazing.
Well, I think that's like the good part of cartoons. Like the good cartoons are like that. Like Rick and Morty. This is not a Rick and Morty podcast, but the amazing thing about that show is they'll just establish, okay, Beth's imagination world was real and Rick left her best friend there when they were five. They have to go back and get him because he's still in this world. And that's like, oh, 45 seconds into the episode. And SpongeBob's kind of like
it's a masterclass in kind of like storytelling, but
it's efficiency.
It is. Yeah, totally. They have a high PER. Before we get into the ranking, though, I wanted to tell you one like small anecdote. So my friend Chris and I love SpongeBob. We talk about it all the time. We always have had this theory that season four is when SpongeBob died. After season four, it was terrible. We never knew why, but we were like, something changed. And it was really specifically marked by the April 20th episode of season four titled The Best Day Ever. It was this huge marketing campaign around it. The episode came out. It was not good. And it kind of was the nail in the coffin that season four is not unlike the first three seasons. So as I was kind of researching SpongeBob, it was created by this guy, Steven Hillenburg, who was also a part of Rocko's Modern Life, by the way. There are some similar animation styles if you look at it. But so I found out that they made season three. They wrote season three, in my opinion, the last good season. And then Steven Hillenburg goes, all right, we're going to stop. We're going to go on a hiatus because we're going to write the movie. And so SpongeBob takes like a break for a while. The movie comes out and then he goes to Nickelodeon and he's like, I'm done. SpongeBob should end. It's perfect. It's peaked. I don't want to do it anymore. And they go, of course, Nickelodeon, making tons of money off it, goes, absolutely not. We need to keep it going. Steven Hillenburg steps down as showrunner and never returns. He stays on as like an advisor, executive producer, whatever, but he never returns. And now it makes so much sense why season four was the beginning of the end for SpongeBob. And now it's just a different show. And the first three seasons are unbelievable.
I didn't know he left that early. So he actually passed away a couple years ago. And there was like a lot of fanfare around it. People obviously very thankful for everything, but that makes sense because I didn't know if we just like the first three seasons because that's when we were like 6 to 10 years old and that's what you enjoy as a kid, or if it actually got worse. But it makes sense. Like as I did the rewatch, I was kind of thinking the earlier ones really are best.
They are.
They really are better.
And I actually don't like when the animation gets too skilled. Do you know what I mean? I think now it's almost too vibrant and too kind of lurid. I don't enjoy it. I like the kind of subtle animation of the first three seasons.
How do you feel about Patches the Pirate?
I think he's great.
I'm a huge fan. You know what? That's a huge part of my life that I really forgot about.
That's Tom Kenny. That's the voice of SpongeBob.
Is that the same guy?
Yeah, he's Patchy.
Wow, I kind of wish I didn't know that. Okay. You want to get to... So we just ranked our top three favorite SpongeBob episodes.
Yeah.
To be clear, you can't really pick three. It's SpongeBob, the value is in the entire catalog. But but we forced ourselves to pick three each year.
Really difficult task. I went back and I kind of watched like my favorite nine and I picked three out of that from memory. And I rewatched them all and came up with the top
three. You
want
to go first
three.
Or you want me to go first here?
I'll go first.
All right, go first.
Okay, so my first one I'm going to say is Band Geeks.
Oh, that was mine.
Yeah, it's season 2, episode 15, which is the one people don't know. Squidward forms a marching band to kind of stick it to his arch rival, Squilliam Fancy Son. Great name, great character, Squilliam. I think Squidward's commitment to being like a classy, worldly guy, even though he's completely talentless, and he's like has this desire to be like an aristocrat, and he's super not... is just, I think, one of the funniest parts of the show. It's so adult. Like, people don't get it. It's also relatable.
I think, so first of all, this episode, I almost didn't list it because it's, I mean, mainstream to be like, I feel like Squidward right now. It's like a little too mainstream to be like, this is the best episode. This is universally regarded as the best episode. You know what? It is. This episode's hilarious. And Patrick is my favorite character, and this has maybe the best Patrick star line, which is when he's like, is mayonnaise an instrument?
It's indelible. Is mayonnaise an instrument? And then he raises his hand again and he goes, horseradish is not an instrument either. And with the owner of the white sedan, you left your lights on when he's got the tuba around his neck, whatever, the trombone. It's so good. And I think what kind of makes this episode unlike the rest is one thing SpongeBob does really well is music.
Yes, it's stunning.
I made a quick list. Let me run through it. You'll hear people listening, if you're a SpongeBob fan, you'll hear the name of this every song and immediately it'll pop into your head. They've done Sweet Victory, which is from Band Geeks.
It was incredible. Really, that was the funny part of the episode. It was incredible.
I'd listen to it today. Goofy Goober Rock from the movie. unbelievable. The Jellyfish Jam, the Campfire Song, Fun,
the Fun. I want to talk about Fun.
Okay.
The lyrics to Fun, it's like, they talk about like friends and the power of friendship, and then
F is for friends that do things together, U is for you and me.
Plankton comes in with U is for uranium bombs. And I'm like,
N is for no survivors.
I was 6 years old watching this. And in retrospect, I can't believe I was allowed to watch this. I don't know. Would you let your kids, like 6 years old, watch like U is for uranium bombs?
100% I would let my kid watch this. Are you kidding me? Do you know what's out there now? We're going to give our kids iPads when they're four.
That's
they can
point.
Find a lot worse. I hope they're watching SpongeBob. But just
point.
To cap it off, the Sandy's Texas song, Ripped Pants, and The Best Time to Wear a Striped Sweater. Every time SpongeBob does music, it's fantastic.
They're
they
unreal.
Even remade the Tiny Tim song in like episode four.
All right, that's a really good one. I also had Band Geeks, and I can't really say enough about it.
I think that's overall the best episode, but my favorite moment comes from a different episode. So what do you have next?
Well, you just go again.
Okay. Season 2, episode 11, Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy 3.
The third one, okay.
So that's the one where they accident. So Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy go on vacation, and they're old, you know, and SpongeBob and Patrick watch the lair for them, and they accidentally defrost Man Ray. And they have to teach him to be good. And there's the laughing belt, and it's all about Man Ray learning to be good. And you know, SpongeBob and Patrick, you know, fall ass backwards into like actually curing him. But the funniest moment, perhaps in SpongeBob history for me, is the wallet scene when they're teaching him to be good. And they go, "All right, Man Ray, what do you do when somebody drops their wallet?" And he goes, "Pat, drop your wallet." Pat drops the wallet, and he's like, Man Ray's like pretending, and he's like, "Oh, I saw you drop this wallet. Here you go." And Pat's like, "That's not my wallet." And he's like, "What are you talking about? I just saw you drop." And he's like, "It's not my wallet." And then he pulls out the license and goes, "Are you Patrick Starr?" And he goes, "Yep." And he goes, "And this is your ID. And he goes, "Yep." And he's like, "I found this ID in this wallet. So that would mean that this is your wallet." And he goes, "That makes sense to me." And he's like, "Then take it." And he goes, "It's not my wallet." And then he just beats the shit out of Patrick. And then the next scene is Patrick carrying a heavy package, and he keeps dropping it on Man Ray's foot. And he goes, "What's in that box?" And he goes, "My wallets." And it's just, that's where like the Family Guy aspect comes in. Sorry, I know that was a long tangent, but I love that scene.
No, it's fine. I think so. Patrick's getting a spinoff for Paramount Plus. They're doing the Patrick Star Show. I think that this is the most home run idea I've ever heard. I can't think of a character who decides more. Oh, you're skeptical of the Patrick Star Show?
Yeah, I'm a purist. I don't like spinoffs. They never work. You're happy about it? Like, what do you like?
So this is from Deadline. The Patrick Star Show follows a younger Patrick Star living at home with his family, where he hosts his own show for the neighborhood from his television turned bedroom. His little sister, Squidina, works behind the scenes to make sure Patrick's show is always running smoothly, while his parents, Bunny and Cecil, and his grandpa, Grandpat, each support Patrick in their own hilariously absurd ways. So Patrick's a YouTube star as an angsty teenager. I think that is a home run.
I mean, it's a good idea, but it's not gonna be as good. It's not even gonna be close.
Spinoffs
never work.
You're 26.
Patrick can't carry the show. The best part about him is that he's an accessory. You know, he's less is more with Patrick.
So you're saying who's the NBA equivalent? You're saying he's like Nick Batum or something.
You know, like if Klay Thompson had to play point guard, it wouldn't work out. He's a catch and shoot guy. He's better when he has 60 points off 12 dribbles.
I feel like Klay Thompson loves Patrick Starr.
Well, haven't you seen the Klay Thompson Patrick Starr? I think it was my Slack avatar.
Oh, yeah, that's
for
a whole
while.
Meme. It's like life becomes art.
What's your second?
I'm obsessed with the Flying Dutchman. I don't know why. I love Shanghai, the first Flying Dutchman episode. It's just, I don't know why. It's the one where Patrick is, they're like, roar. Oh, and he's like, leetle, leetle, leetle. It's just
the little and the Flying Dutchman keeps breathing in to roar, and he little.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I also forgot how, again, I'm serious about, like, I think that they were doing a lot of acid while making this show, because there's a point where the Flying Dutchman's mad at Squidward, and he just unzips like the fabric of reality and throws him into, like, they call it the zipper of despair, and he's flying through what looks like your subconscious. It's like a Salvador Dali and like severed heads and all this yeah. shit for like all eternity, unzipping. He's like, anyone else want to go in? And Squidward spends like 10 minutes of like real life time in there. I think that that's the moments that I never appreciated as a kid, and those are all the ones that are really funny now.
Well, yeah, because like a little kid like is not, you're right, he's not going to understand that. Like in the Mermaid and Barnacle Boy, once they cure Man Ray, Patrick whispers, "I guess he's reconstituted," and then SpongeBob goes, "Rehabilitated," and then Patrick says, "Gesundheit." Like, just it's on another level. It's on another level.
Or like also the other one on my list is like this simple, your shoes untied, which is just SpongeBob tries to teach Patrick how to tie his shoes and the process realizes he doesn't know how to tie his shoes. But the funniest part is literally the first 5 seconds. He's sitting in the chair and he's watching, like, again, they meld the cartoons with like real life, and he's watching his TV has a real life video of like a sponge in the ocean gyrating. And SpongeBob's like really excited, and then Gary comes over, his cat, and he's like, "Sorry, I was watching football." I was,
and which like no one would understand, and it's aged like fine wine. So that's your third episode. That's your third one.
That's my third one. It's great.
Mine is Survival of the Idiots, where they get locked in the tree dome while Sandy's hibernating.
Yeah, that's a really honestly, it's better than mine. That's a legendary episode.
Subtle joke when Sandy is sleep talking and she goes, "I'm going to catch you and throw you in jail at taxpayers' expense." Like, what are we? Are you kidding me?
That one is a legendary episode. All of these are from the first three seasons, though.
Oh, every single one. Season
one.
Are
we sure it's because the creator changed and not that just that was the sweet spot of our childhood and everyone feels that when you were a certain age, that's the best thing that there ever was?
Well, no, because like what, 2004 or five when season four aired, I was nine or 10. Like, I'm not sure you've outgrown SpongeBob at that age. I actively remember being disinterested. I remember the Best Day Ever episode coming out and being like, this is not good anymore. It's unbelievable. All my other episodes, I have nine that I rewatched, and those are all honorable mentions, which my top one is Frankendoodle, which is incredible. They're all in season one, two, and three.
I like that you were just ahead of the curve and just being apathetic, and you're just like 9-year-old Craig, and you're just like, you know, this really was better with the previous creator.
It's true. You know, Larry David left Seinfeld, the show dipped a little bit. Armando Iannucci left Veep. It happens. I have one question for you.
Okay.
I want to talk about quickly this episode, Frankendoodle. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
The most meta of all. It's where they find a pencil and then they write and all the drawings come to life.
So there's a moment, and this is also perhaps one of the funniest moments in SpongeBob, in my opinion, when Frankendoodle draws a hole in the ground and they fall to the bottom of it. And then a wrench drops on Patrick's head and he says, "Where's the leak, ma'am?" And he's concussed. But the second time they pop up to the top of the ditch and Doodlebob throws a bowling ball at him and Patrick's head turns into a pin. And it hits him, and then he falls to the bottom of the ditch, and the ball follows into the ditch and falls and hits him in the head. And SpongeBob yells like, "Pat, are you okay?" And Patrick yells, "Finland, the country." He goes, "Finland!" To this day, I have never understood why he said that. If it's a meta joke, I don't understand. Why did he yell Finland?
Because was he going to yell Norway? It's not as funny.
I don't know. I never got it.
I think
it.
It's really obvious. You don't get it?
Acid?
Yeah, exactly. It's psilocybin, actually. That's the technical term.
That's probably
okay. Well,
it.
Let's fall into our own hole before we just, you know, go on. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, the SpongeBob memes will live on forever, Heifetz. And I'm so happy that this is the show. We got so lucky with when we were born because we understand these SpongeBob memes more than anybody. And I want to recommend there is a Twitter account out there called SpongeBob Screenshots or SpongeBob Screen Caps, I think. And it's literally screenshots from every scene, from every episode in order. And they are just a blank canvas for a meme. Grab them. Turn them into memes, people.
And then we will officially be old and washed up when there's like a Phineas and Ferb TV concierge episode.
Yeah, we will be. That's a show I never really dipped my toe in. I've been begging The Ringer to let me do a SpongeBob binge show. Binge Bob Sponge Mode, whatever we want to call it.
Binge Bob Sponge Mode. Okay. Well, there you go. This was like the prologue to that. So there you go.
Paramount All Plus. Right. Check it out.
Paramount Plus. Yeah. Thank you to everyone. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, DK. Oh, I think he's not here. Just muscle memory. Thank you, SpongeBob. Check out the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. Check out Paramount Plus and SpongeBob. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.